Welcome to the Humble Hoof Podcast. My name is Alicia Harlov. This is a podcast for both horse owners and hoof care professionals, offering discussions into various philosophies on the health of the hoof and soundness of your horse. Please check us out on Facebook or at thehumblehoof.com. A special thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Cavallo. For our Humble Hoof listeners, they are offering 15% off their Cavallo Trek hoof boots using the coupon code HRN at checkout. The Trek is the world's most popular and versatile hoof boot and Cavallo's toughest trail boot, while also doubling as an option for therapy or rehab. The front closure system makes it easily adaptable to various hoof shapes, and TPU upper design allows for maximum strength while minimizing weight for the comfort and ease of movement for your horse. These are recommended by vets and trainers and also loved as transport boots by barrel racers, show jumpers, dressage riders, and everyone in between. Again, for 15% off a pair of Treks, use the code HRN at checkout at cavallo-inc.com. In the past few months, we've had a handful of podcast episodes about nutrition in the hoof, because if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know that I'm really passionate about the correct diet leading to the healthiest feet possible for an individual horse. So one thing I really want to dig into for this episode was amino acids and why are they important and how or do they even affect hoof health? I talked to Dr. Kellen, Dr. Durrani, and Dr. Rowe over at Mad Barn about what these are and why they're important. And of course, a special thank you to Mad Barn for sponsoring our 2025 sold out Humble Hoof Podiatry Clinic. You can use code THEHUMBLEHOOF for 5% off your order at madbarn.com. All right. So obviously, I want to thank you guys so much for being willing to be on the podcast again. And, you know, we have Dr. Durrani, Dr. Kellen, and Dr. Rowe, and we're going to be talking about amino acids today, which is great because that's something that I feel like I have questions on as well, and something that I know is important for hoof health and soundness, but the nitty gritty of it is something that I need to learn more about. So thank you all for being willing to chat with me more about this and just come back on and spend more of your afternoon with me, because I've learned so much from our talk. So I appreciate that.
Thanks for having us back on.
Yeah. So we know that this series is so important for hoof health because nutrition plays such a large role in equine health in general. And as a hoof care provider, I'm always telling owners that hoof health is a reflection of the animal's health. So I feel very strongly, at least with my rehab facility, that that does start with nutrition. So I love that we're able to kind of break that down a bit. So before we kind of dive into amino acids and their effect on feet, can we just kind of start with what are amino acids?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Dr. Durrani, Director of Research at Mad Barn. So amino acids really just refers to the chemical structure. So it's a molecule with an amino group at one end and a carboxy group on the other end. So there's a few that are produced just in metabolism in the body. And then what we really refer to as amino acids when we're talking about nutrition are the 21 that are used to build proteins in the body. So proteins are made up of a string of amino acids and then folded into the correct shape so they can have their function. And of those 21, there's 10 that body can't make from any other compound. So they need to be supplied in the diet. So we call those essential or indispensable amino acids because they really need to be in the diet for the horse to have those supplied to the cells at all so that they can then build proteins. So yeah, those 21 are really what we care about when we're talking about feeding horses enough amino acids.
Awesome. And, you know, when I think about equine hoof health and nutrition, a lot of times I'm talking to owners about the three limiting amino acids, and that's honestly the only three that I know. So I would love if you could talk about the difference between the, you know, limiting amino acids versus essential amino acids and what that means.
Yeah. So of those 10 essential amino acids, there's three that are considered limiting. And what that means is if they're not in the diet at a high enough level, then they could limit protein synthesis in the body. So the, you know, cells might be primed to make a certain amount of a specific protein. And if they don't have enough of an amino acid like lysine, then they may not be able to make enough of that protein. And so for horses and horse hooves, keratin is the main protein we would be thinking about. And so if you don't have enough lysine or methionine, then that can slow down how quickly the cells can make keratin. And so you might see slow hoof growth or weak hooves as a consequence of that.
And this might be kind of a silly question or a basic question, but do different amino acids make up different proteins? Like you're talking about keratin there.
So definitely, yes. The short answer is yes. Different amino acids are going to make up different proteins. So every protein in the body is going to have a specific code, if you will, quote unquote, code of amino acids. So just like Dr. Durrani said, there are 21 amino acids. So you can think you've got billions of combinations of amino acids that can come together in different lengths and combinations, et cetera, that are going to then build a specific protein. So not every protein has every amino acid in it. So yes, every protein is going to have a specific chain of amino acids that make it up.
Okay, awesome. Something that I've also had asked of me a lot, and I've not been 100% sure if my answers are correct on it from owners that I work with, is, you know, if they're feeding their horses and they're, you know, so often I'm having them focus on those three limiting amino acids because I, you know, look for that for hoof health. How is that different than crude protein? And can they get enough crude protein by supplying the limiting amino acids?
Crude protein is really, it's a measure of nitrogen, not protein. And they multiply that by 6.25 to estimate protein. The crude protein also includes things like nitrates, if they're present in small amounts or in large amounts. But the amount of crude protein required is much, much higher than those limiting amino acids. For example, we estimate, say, 27 to 30 grams of lysine is required, but the total crude protein requirement may be around 650 to 700 grams.
Oh, wow.
So, no, you're not going to satisfy crude protein requirements just with the limiting amino acids.
Okay. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. And that makes sense for what I look for in terms of the amounts of limiting amino acids that I'm adding in. Obviously, I'm not seeing hundreds of grams that I'm adding. So, So obviously, you know, we're kind of like diving into these amino acids. So I know that Dr. Durrani talked about this a little bit, but why are these amino acids important for hoof health and what do they do in terms of growing healthier hooves?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think most people, most horse owners are aware that, you know, certain minerals are really important for hoof health. We've talked about zinc and copper in the past. They're also probably aware that vitamins like biotin are really important for hoof health. But I think that amino acids get forgotten a little bit, and they shouldn't be, because, you know, we've alluded to this a little bit already, but you know, keratin being that primary protein structure in the foot is, it's a protein. So it's made up of those amino acids. So it's a necessary part of that hoof structure. So with, you know, issues with weak hoof wall or crumbly hoof wall or slow hoof growth, whatever the case may be, sure, it could be an issue with mineral imbalance. Maybe it is zinc and copper that's low in the diet, or maybe there's not enough biotin in the diet. But we don't want to forget to also look at the rest of the diet to see where are we sitting with protein. And specifically, even if there looks like there's enough protein in the diet, are we certain that those key limiting aminos, lysine, methionine, and threonine, are being met?
Yeah. So just to kind of hop in on that, what happens if, I know that Dr. Durrani also sort of touched on this, but what happens if the horse has plenty of crude protein, but not enough of the limiting amino acids?
Yeah. So basically, oh, Dr. K, do you want to jump in?
Every protein is coded in the DNA, and there's an assembly process for them that takes the code from the DNA and puts them together in order like beads on a string. So if something's missing, it doesn't matter how much of the other ones you have, the assembly is going to stop right there. And methionine is especially important in that aspect because it's the starter amino acid for many, many proteins.
Which one was?
Methionine.
Oh, okay. Yes. I think I've read, you might have, did you do a blog post on methionine? I think I've read that one.
I've probably done several.
Yeah.
On methionine or sulfur.
Is sulfur, are they similar?
There are three sulfur-containing amino acids, methionine, cysteine, and cysteine. They can get any of those from the diet, but they can also synthesize the cysteine and the cysteine from methionine. So methionine is the key one we look at. However, sometimes you'll see in nutritional texts, they'll give you the methionine plus cysteine content when they're considering if the intake is adequate. But really, you could get away with just methionine if you had to.
I think one piece we kind of were talking around but haven't clarified is with the sulfur-containing amino acids, why we care about those is because they give those sulfur molecules in those amino acids will form like a tight bond in the structure of the protein. And so that's what gives then keratin its strong structure. So that's why you want to make sure that you have enough of that methionine to make enough keratin because it'll give that strong structure.
Interesting. And you know, you're talking about the adequate intake. And how do we know? I mean, obviously, a lot of products that we buy list, like we're talking about the crude protein, they list the crude protein or protein amount or percentage, but they don't always list the amino acids in them unless it's a specific amino acid supplement. So how do we know if our hay or our feed is providing enough of the amino acids?
It's not routinely done, but there are ways to separate out the amino acids and give a profile. There are a couple of publications out there that list different types of hays and what their amino acid content is. And I think there's a chart in the NRC that has amino acid breakdown for a lot of different feedstuffs. So you'd have to go through and look for everything in your diet. And if you're just feeding a commercial feed, you're at the mercy of the producer, I'm afraid, if they don't list it. But yeah, you could ask them. Maybe they do know.
Do you typically find that hay has, I mean, obviously, that's going to vary probably, like you were saying, based on the different hays. But does it have enough of those limiting amino acids? Do horses get that from their natural forage?
Not usually. It depends on how much they're eating, too, of course. But lysine, on average, I practically have just out once. On average, the deficiency of lysine in a forage-based diet is between 7 and 10 grams a day. That's averaging out a number of grass hays. Alfalfa is a little higher. Just about everything is pretty low in methionine, and we don't really even know the exact requirement for methionine, which is a problem itself.
Yeah.
I think the requirement's underestimated.
And are there other, I mean, other than the hay, obviously, are there other sources of limiting amino acids that horses would naturally get?
Or anything. Everything they eat, really. Grams are a good source. They have a fairly high protein content, around 17-20%. And they're one of the few things that are pretty rich in methionine.
Brands?
Yes.
And so, I mean, obviously a little off topic, but if you have a metabolic horse, are typically brands are pretty high, or higher in starch, aren't they?
Yeah. Flax is probably, I haven't looked at flax for a while, but I think flax has a really good amino acid profile.
Yeah, that makes
usually
sense.
We say soybean meal as well. That's more for lysine. But yeah, if you're looking mostly at methionine, you might be better off just supplementing methionine on its own or as part of this, like a three amino acid combination of lysine, methionine, and threonine.
Yeah, and when we're talking about sources, so the reason I'm asking too is because I've always just supplemented, like Dr. Durrani, you were saying, the three limiting amino acids as its own supplement. A lot of times because here we have either metabolic horses or we've had horses that are historically easy keepers, and I'm trying not to necessarily add a ton of calories, but get what they need. So I've always just kind of assumed that that's where we fed it. So I didn't really even think about the brands or soybean meal or flax, although I do have everybody, almost everyone here on flaxseed. So I'm glad that, that's helpful in that way too. But typically I've seen, you know, the like the three amino acid supplements on their own, or what that's usually what I get.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great strategy for those horses where you don't want to be adding any calories, but especially if they're going to be on a restricted diet, like restricting the forages or something, you want to be sure that you're just restricting the calories to support weight loss and, you know, the starch and sugar to support metabolic health, but you still want to keep the protein adequate. So that's a good way to help them be at the right level for those amino acids.
Yeah. And that's something that I honestly learned from ECIR was that, you know, so many of these horses that are metabolic, we're focused so much on having them not have excess calories that there's that risk of owners then depriving them of the nutrients they need because they're so worried about their weight. And I guess that's why I've sort of focused so much on just the, you know, supplement forms of things for those horses, obviously not the ones that are harder keepers. But yeah. And, you know, something that I know absolutely nothing about. So this is hopefully not a silly question too, but are there different forms? You know, I've always fed or looked into different forms of like zinc and copper and how there can be like sulfate forms or the proteinate, like a amino acid form of a mineral. Are there different forms of amino acids? And does that matter at all in their the body utilizing them?
It's not necessarily different forms in terms of like organic versus inorganic, but you'll see like L-lysine or like DL-methionine. And that just refers to the mirror. They can be like mirror images of each other. So like D-methionine is an isomer of methionine, what it's called. But really, it's like a handedness type of thing. And so in nature, most amino acids exist as the L isomer. You might see D-methionine as a supplemental form of methionine. And in a lot of species, it's been shown they can convert that to the L isomer, which the cells then use to be put into proteins. So yeah, there is kind of this form similarity to minerals, but it's more of the molecule's not different. It's just kind of rotated differently.
Okay. And so if you get an amino acid supplement, is it typically one form or another, or is it, you know, the body's pretty good at converting it? Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, the only one that it converts is the methionine.
Okay.
As far as we know. So if you get any amino acid supplement, you get, when you buy a human one or any mammal that's four, it's going to have the L form, unless the methionine can be a mixture of D and L.
So that's not as much something that we have to read a label or worry too much about.
No. Yeah. There are other forms that are called protective forms, like methionine analog, hydroxy analog, that are given to cattle that survive the fermentation process in the rumen so they can get back to the small intestine and be absorbed for the cow. But you're not going to find those in a horse supplement.
Okay. Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, these are, I guess it's a little bit of the nitty gritty that maybe most owners won't have to worry about, but if anything, it kind of eases my mind that I'm not trying to feed the wrong supplement if I'm getting that generic limiting amino acid. And I think one thing that I've worried about with metabolic horses, and again, I know that I'm focusing on those, but that's definitely sort of my niche that I work with. Are there concerns for feeding these horses too much protein, or in general, is there a concern of feeding horses too much protein?
There is. I mean, the research on it is really poor at this point. We need some better studies. But there's some indication that if you feed a high amount of protein, that it's going to cause an insulin release. And we know that some amino acids, like leucine in specific, can cause insulin releases, but it looks like even a high percentage of protein. For example, the one study used several pounds of a 35% protein balancer, which is ridiculous because nobody's going to feed that much. So what we really need are studies that looked at something like what you would get if you said alfalfa, or what you would get if you said a normal amount of a balancer. But it can happen. We just don't know where the ceiling is yet.
Interesting. Because I know that I have a few clients that have PSSM horses, and they're constantly trying to feed more protein. And I guess that's obviously a special case because they need to utilize that differently. I'm honestly still learning about that. But is that just depending on the different cases and the different horses of how much that we're feeding them?
Well, PSSM horses, a true PSSM horse is typically very insulin sensitive, so you don't have to worry about that with them.
Okay, interesting. What are symptoms that you would see if a horse had not enough protein in their diet? What can owners look for?
Yeah, so I think in general, if there's not enough protein in the diet, kind of few of the big things that, you know, owners might notice are that they are not building or maintaining their muscle mass well, you know, so they might have some evidence of muscle wasting, or if that horse is in exercise and they're just not, you know, building and maintaining a strong top line, something like that. But other targeted signs of low protein, poor hoof quality is definitely one. And I would also say poor kind of coat quality and mane and tail quality as well, since keratin are in those structures too.
Poor immunity, for one thing.
Oh, interesting. Good,
Mm-hmm. Really?
And slow recovery from illnesses, or even post-exercise recovery could be slow as well.
They also have trouble gaining weight, even if the calories are adequate.
Wow. And is there a reason for that? Or is it just sort of they need the protein to maintain weight?
Well, a huge percentage of every tissue in the horse's body is protein. After you take away the ash and the water, you're basically left with protein. So they can't build basically anything without enough protein. Poor growth in young horses is a big one for protein.
And then isn't there a fear, not fear, but a worry of too much protein in young horses too for their joints, correct?
That's a myth.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's good to know. So what is the term that...
Myositis. Yeah.
That STG has been blamed on protein. And I think what it really goes back to is calories, not the protein.
Okay, that's good to know. So how do you determine protein needs for various horses? I mean, obviously, I know that age and workload are going to be a part of that.
Well, the NRC has done all that work for you. They have beautiful tables that you can use.
Oh, awesome.
To figure out exactly what the horse needs. And it does vary. Young horses need a lot more than an adult. The two highest categories are lactating mares and young weanlings, which fortunately need virtually the identical diet, so you can let your wean eat the mare's diet until you wean him, and then he's ready.
And it was interesting when you were mentioning the symptoms of not enough protein in the diet, that a lot of those, for me, again, my subset of rehab, they seem to mirror some symptoms that I look for when a horse is older and might be a PPID possibility for diagnosis, and why I push owners to test horses for PPID, like the losing muscle mass or being slow to recover or slow to heal. Is there a link between that and protein use?
Not that we know of.
It just happens to have like mirror symptoms, kind of.
Yeah. Look, the reason you see that in PPID is that PPID is a very catabolic state. It causes tissues to break down, breaks down tendons, ligaments, muscle. So it would mimic the symptoms of insufficient protein, but it's a different process.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And I know that a lot of owners that I work with, when I see that, because again, my brain goes right to PPID if I'm seeing an older horse that has that. You know, a lot of times the owner's like, oh, well, I'm just going to increase their protein. They just need more protein. And that's sort of like their answer. And my answer is, well, why don't you test for PPID? But I guess it really could be either or both or neither. Or yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And I think one thing that I see often with owners who have horses in work or competition is they're so focused on protein. It's such like a buzz thing of, you know, if I'm constantly trying to push owners to do a more forage-based diet, the biggest thing I hear from owners of horses that are in heavier work is, well, they won't get enough protein. So is that a concern for performance horses? Are we supposed to be focusing much more on protein, or how are they getting sufficient protein in their diet if they're in heavier work?
So those horses will usually have a higher appetite as well. So they'll start to eat more hay if they have free choice access. And so a lot of times letting them meet that foraging, their higher intake, will take care of their higher protein requirement, because it's only, I think, 20% higher protein requirement once you get to the upper ends of very heavy exercise. But you could potentially be overfeeding protein. Not that that's necessarily going to be harmful, but there are concerns with that in terms of that the horse isn't going to just be able to make more proteins from those amino acids. It's going to have to excrete anything that's excess that it's not using to make proteins in the body. They break down those extra amino acids and then it comes out in the urine. So if you're thinking about an exercising horse, they already need a lot of water just to support their exercise, to support sweating. And so if you're drawing on that body water to make more urine, it could potentially cause problems with fluid and electrolyte balance in terms of you're diverting more of that water away from their actual exercise needs by having to produce more urine. So it is something you want to more carefully balance. And if you think they do need more amino acids on top of their diet, then again, it's better to supplement the pure form of those limiting ones so that you're giving a targeted supplement rather than, you know, a bulk of more protein.
I think one thing that there was like a huge fad a while ago that a supplement was being pushed, an amino acid supplement that had such low amounts of amino acids that it wasn't even enough for a human dose. Yeah. And it was, everybody was saying like, oh, I have my horse on this, so they're getting great amino acids. And it was just such minimal amounts.
So
if we're reading a label, is there, some target numbers we can kind of shoot for some horses, or should we just refer people to the NRC?
Well, for adult horses, I think you can use Three Amigos as a perfect example. It's got 10 grams of lysine, 6 grams of methionine, 4 of threonine. With a growing horse, threonine is a little more important than it is with an adult. But for an adult horse, that 10, 6, 4 is just about perfect. And think back to hay for a minute, because everybody has in their head a protein percentage that the horse needs. And that's not how requirements are broken down. Requirements are in grams per day, which depends on the size of the horse. It's not a percentage. And that 10% figure that everybody thinks they need to have would actually provide. If the horse is getting 10 kilograms of hay a day, and it's a 500 kilogram horse, at maintenance, you're several hundred grams over requirement with the 10% hay. You can take a mare through lactation on an 11% hay and meet her crude protein requirement. So when somebody's worried about protein, they should work with the nutritionist who can really tell them what the actual need is and whether they're needing it, because they probably are and they don't feel it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've had owners who will really push me, because when I tell them that if their horse moves here, they're basically on a forage-based diet and I just supplement based on their hay test. And like, well, they're not getting any protein. And I show them the hay test. I'm like, well, this has protein in it. So I don't know, if the horse is eating the hay, they are getting protein. And then I also supplement the limiting amino acids. So at least for the horses here, that they seem to do really, really well on that. And obviously they're in rehab, so not that heavy work. But that's good that that's a starting point for owners to look for.
You can tell people, too, that even the NRC requirements for protein are based on a digestibility of only 50%. So if you're meeting NRC, there's a pretty good safety margin in there, at least for non-pregnant, non-growing horses.
So do you think that it's likely that they might even digest more than 50%?
What they're eating, that would be a pretty mature grass hay, I'd say.
Yeah.
If you have a pretty high quality hay, if you have any alfalfa, it's going to be higher.
Yeah, that makes sense. Awesome. All right. Well, is there anything else that is kind of important to address? Or any, is there any parting words for owners that are maybe concerned about protein or want to, you know, reach out to a nutritionist? I know that, again, we've talked about this every time, but Mad Barn has a group of nutritionists ready to help people too, because I know that these subjects can get kind of technical. So anything else that we might have missed?
I was just going to say, you know, for any listeners who are potentially worried about their horse's protein intake, you know, reaching out to us and working with one of our nutritionists, or certainly there are, you know, great independent nutritionists out there as well, but working with a nutritionist that can really sit down and do all the calculations for you and just help either put your mind at ease that, yes, you are supplying ample protein in the diet, or potentially no, do we need to look for some extra protein sources to help boost, you know, either just protein overall, or are we concerned that some of those limiting amino acids might not be met in the current diet? So, you know, using resources like, you know, Mad Barn's nutrition services are great. And then two, you know, I'm always encouraging people to submit their hay for forage testing, just so that we have that definitive answer as to how much protein is really being provided in that hay that they're feeding.
Great. Yeah.
And you can do that through our website as well. We've kind of tried to streamline the process for horse owners, so it's easy to figure out how to submit the sample and get the results that a nutritionist will look at with you.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. And I really appreciate you helping to clarify a lot of these questions, because these are questions that I also don't often know how to answer. So I'm glad that I can kind of be more equipped with owners who are, you know, pushing for more insight on that. And I'm really, again, grateful that you have such a great education program that you're all setting up for free, which is amazing, through Mad Barn, but that we have access to nutritionists through Mad Barn as well. So thank you so much for providing all that and also being willing to chat with me again on the podcast, because it's such important information. And I cannot even begin to tell listeners how different how improved I see hooves when they're getting the nutrients and the nutrition they need. And when we actually sit down and analyze the diet in regards to what they actually need in a day and not just guessing. So this is so important for hoof health and soundness. All right. Well, thank you all again.
Yes, yeah, thank you for having us.
Great.
Awesome. And again, I really appreciate this, because this is so, your episodes with Mad Barn have been incredibly popular, because I think everyone, it applies to everyone. It doesn't just apply to people that have hoof issues or a laminitic horse or things like that. So thank you so much for being willing to do this.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, thank you,
Alicia. Again.
Yeah, and have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Bye,
y'all. Bye.
Bye.
I always say that I'm slightly more hoof obsessed than the average person, and chances are, if you're listening to a hoof care podcast, you are too. So we should probably be friends. Feel free to find me on Facebook or email me at thehumblehoof@gmail.com.